So reflecting on the way it is, we can see here and now this room is like this. Retreat Center Shrine Room. We can be in here and we can not notice it, or we can have views and opinions about it. Just whatever your views or preferences or feelings, just know that like this. And during this next week, there'll be a lot of kind of comings and goings and things happening that we can't control. They're kind of into a perfect retreat situation where they, you know, we've got everything, you know, under control and perfect for what we want, what we regard as a proper formal retreat. I know that we have just to be aware of like expectation, what we, the view about what a proper retreat should be or formal retreat, and as whatever you, you know, whatever opinions, views you have, just know they're the way they are, you know, and the kind of irritation or frustration or aversion you might feel. You can use all this for meditation. The important thing is the awareness. It is the way it is, rather than, you know, trying to just suppress your feelings or ignore or just get very upset and angry about things not going the way you want, and then not looking at that, not taking the opportunity to observe the way it is. If one is upset and about the way it is, we can use that. That's a part of the meditation. Being upset is like this. So unwanted things happen in any retreat, like the window in the temple, the electric motor that opens and closes it, doesn't work. High tech, isn't it? And this long pole. Or we could get knotted ropes and hang them from the beams and learn to climb up ropes to open and close the window. A good physical exercise. Then the spotlight went out. And I noticed, you know, just in my own, you know, kind of mind, just that when things go wrong, or things break, or, you know, things aren't going, you know, in a way that I feel frustration or even, you know, just, you know, frustration maybe or irritation with it, then, you know, I'd like to use those situations. It's because I feel that if the window doesn't close and the spotlight doesn't go on, then I feel a certain way. I'm aware of that feeling of not wanting the spotlight to be broken or the window or whatever. This feeling of wanting to get it fixed right away. We can just get somebody in to do it right now between breaks, between so it doesn't interfere with my practice. But notice, in all of this, mindfulness is the important factor, isn't it? Because your concentration can get disrupted, but mindfulness, as you trust it, then it opens to life, to the flow of life as an experience with its whether it's sati sampachanya or awareness, apperception, intuitive awareness. I keep reiterating this so that you begin to really appreciate the difference between awareness and intuitive awareness and thinking and analysis or coming from, you know, trying to get something or get rid of something through the controlling mind. So like thinking, the thinking process, if you're caught into that, then you will end up, you know, always, well, it should be like this, it shouldn't be like that, and this is right and this is wrong. And even like we can say, Buddhism is right. We say the Buddhist teachings are right. And then, stop there, get attached to the idea that Buddhist teachings are right. Then the result of that, if we don't have sati sampachanya along with that, then we become people who are Buddhists who feel we're right because we're following the right teachings. I mean, the whole logic and the to attachment to the perception follows that we become like that. We can become self-righteous Buddhists. We can feel that any other form of Buddhism that doesn't kind of fit into what we consider right then is wrong, or other religions are wrong. We can say because they don't even talk about Buddhism or Dhamma. And that's the thinking, and that's how limiting that is, the thoughts, perceptions. You know, you're stuck oftentimes very inferior kind of perceptions of yourself. You know, we can be very attached to very negative perceptions of oneself and think it's right. Then apperception is being aware of perception. Perception of myself, or that Buddhism is right, is like this. You can see that Buddhism, the Buddhist teachings, right, it all arises and ceases. And what's left is this. There's still consciousness, awareness, intelligence. It's intelligent, pure. Not my purity as a personal achievement. It's naturally pure. And notice this includes both the body and the emotions and the intellect. So this is like the Eightfold Path, isn't it? Sila, Samadhi, Panya. Because Sati Sampachanya includes, so the body is included now, isn't it? not dismissing the physical condition that we're experiencing, includes the emotional, and it, whatever state your body's in, whether it's healthy, sickly, strong and weak, male or female, young or old, whatever is the quality isn't the issue, is it? Not saying how your body should be, but the body is included in this moment. Apperception, ability to embrace that which is. So the body's right now. This is my experience, this body's here. Then they can feel it. The emotional state, it includes that. The emotional state, no matter what way, whether it's you're happy or sad or elated or depressed or confused or clear or confident or doubtful or jealous or frightened, greedy, lustful. It includes all of it, but it's noticing the way, it's not critical yet. We're not saying you shouldn't have lustful emotions or anything like that. Not making moral judgments. Because we're using sati sampajanya, then if you get caught up in your brain, your intellect, then it says, oh, you're having lustful thoughts in the shrine room. You shouldn't do that. You're not a very good monk or nun if you do things like that. You're impure. Because we're very attached to these judgment, this judgmental, critical function that we have. But sati sampajanya includes that, includes the judgment that you can see. It doesn't judging judgment, it's just noticing the kind of tyrannical, self-righteous superego that says you shouldn't be the way you are, you shouldn't be selfish, you should be compassionate and loving, you should. All that kind of thing. Buddhism is right. I'm getting nowhere in my practice. I'm that kind of thing. The whole thing is sati sampajanya embraces that. It's just noticing the way it is. So I can listen to my intellect, my superego. I know that. I know you. And the emotional state, the body. And it's patient with all this. It's not trying to control or anything, not trying to make any problem about it, but just as we relax and open to these things, then we allow them to, they change on their own. They have their own karmic force. And we're giving them that opportunity, because our refuge is not in thinking or emotions or a physical body. So just see this refuge, just this simple ability to listen, be attentive to this moment. Then I always refer to the sound of silence, because that every time that I just open, that's what I hear. You know, that's like the edge of it. And that contains, that embraces the body, the emotional quality, or the thinking mind, all at once. You know, it's not like ABC or anything in tandem or in sequence, but in just the way it is, you know, just as a whole. It includes, it doesn't pick and choose. You know, I want this, but I don't want that. And just noticing this, trusting and valuing this ability that each one of us has. Something to really treasure and cultivate. Reflect on intuition, then, is a like the point that includes and embraces. This is, you know, this is the mind. We have this intuitive ability or thinking ability, which excludes the point you get through concentrating on an object. The one point that you focus on to exclude, or when you're using intuitive awareness, then it includes. It's the perception of a point, isn't it? When you take it literally, it means one naturally excludes anything that's not in that point. That's a rational, logical way of looking at it. So like one pointedness can be seen in terms of one point that excludes everything, because that's the logic of thought. And intuition is non-verbal, non-thinking. So it's, the point is in everywhere. It includes. So it says sati sampajanya, satipanya, these are the words that the Buddha, you know, uses to describe the path to the deathless. That's why you can't do it through thinking or analysis or definition or acquiring all the knowledge in the Abhidhamma, Pitaka, and the suttas and all this, and, you know, just becoming an expert on Buddhism, because, you know, you're not, you might know a lot about it, but you don't know it. Like knowing all about honey without tasting it. Chemical formulas, different qualities, which is rated the highest and the best and the sweetest. What is considered common and vulgar honey, and what is lower realm honey. You might know all about it, but not know the flavor of any of it. You have pictures of it, and portraits, Buddha rupas, the whole lot. But then this taste of honey in terms of intuition is like this, isn't it? When, if you just taste honey, then, you know, you're intuitively aware it's like this, it tastes like this. Sweetness is like this. So intuition is, you know, it's panya comes from intuition, not from analysis. So you can know all about Buddhism and still not have, not use any wisdom in your life. So the word combination satipanya, sati sampajanya. I really like these words, actually. You might have noticed. And then satisampajanya is not some kind of thing you learn through, you know, through acquiring it. It's awakening. It's when it, learning to trust this awakening. Paying attention to life. It's not like you can acquire satisampajanya through studying about it. Or through, you know, through your personal efforts. It's an imminent act of trust in the unknown, because you can't get hold of it. Define it for me. Describe it to me. Tell me if I have it, and that kind of thing. It's, you know, nobody can say you, well, I think you have it. You look like you're having, you know, you look like you're mindful right now. But you might, you know, a lot of people that look mindful aren't necessarily mindful at all. It's not a matter of someone telling you or acquiring all the right definitions for the words, but in recognizing, realizing it, the reality of it, and trusting it. So to me, I used to experiment with this because from my background, I spent so many years in university studying and so conditioned to want to define and understand everything through the intellect. I was always in a state of doubt, because the more I tried to figure everything out, you know, I'm quite good at figuring it out, but still wasn't quite certain whether I got it right or not. Because the thinking process, it has no certainty to it. It has kind of, it's clean and neat and tidy, but it is not liberating in itself. You know, like intellectual things are much, you know, they're much kind of, emotional things are a bit messy. And the emotions, you get cry and you feel sad and you cry and you feel sorry and you feel angry and feel emotions like jealousy and envy and all these kind of messy feelings. And then but a nice intellectual frame of reference is so, you know, so pleasurable because it's so tidy and neat and isn't messy, doesn't get sticky, wet and soggy. So but it doesn't feel anything either. When you're caught in the intellect, then it sucks you off from your feeling, you know, because your emotional life doesn't work anymore. So you suppress it because, you know, if you're attached to thought, reason, logic, then it has its pleasure and its gifts, but it also makes you very insensitive. Because thoughts, they don't have any sensitive capability, do they? Thoughts are not sensitive conditions. or ideals about all is love, or universal compassion. The words themselves, you know, they have no ability to feel emotion or even compassion or anything like that. So when we attach to the ideals, and even though we might attach to the most beautiful, perfect ideals, that attachment blinds us. You know, we can talk about how we all must love each other and have compassion for all sentient beings, and not be able to, in any practical way, do that, or feel it, or notice it. So you're then going into the heart, you know, the emotional where oftentimes it's amorphous, where it is that you can't really, where it isn't clean and neat and tidy like the intellect, where the emotions can be all over the place. And then the intellect says, oh, this is so messy. Emotional things are so messy, and you know, you can't trust them, and feel embarrassed. It's embarrassing. I don't want to be considered emotional. The Ajahn Sumedho is very emotional. I think, I don't want people to think that. I'm reasonable. Well, I like that. Intelligent, reasonable, kind. But say, Ajahn Sumedho is very emotional. It makes me sound like I'm weak and wet. Doesn't it? At least to me. Sumedho is emotional. You know, he cries and he weeps and he's wet and he's kind of all over the place. It's, So you think of Ajahn Sumedho is mindful. That's nice. Intelligent, mindful, and wise. Balance. So emotions then are oftentimes just ignored or rejected, not appreciated, we don't learn from them, because we're always rejecting them or denying them. At least I found this easy to do myself. So in this sati sampajanya, it's like opening and willing to be a mess. Let a mess be a mess. A mess is like this. Wet, weakness, all over the place. Being foolish and silly, stupid and all that, all these, you know, it's like this. So it's like sati sampajanya embraces all that, not judging, passing judgment or trying to control or pick or choose, but just notice it's like this. If this is emotion that's present, this is the way it is. It's like this. So the point that includes is notice that it's the here and now, like pachubana dhamma. Just this switching on, this attention, this imminent kind of slight shift, just, it isn't very much, is it? Just opening, relaxing and opening to this present. Listening, being attentive. It's not going into some kind of real super duper samadhi at all. It's just like this. Doesn't seem like much at all. And you kind of relax and trust. Rest in it. You find it sustains itself. It's natural, it's not created by you, you're not creating it. And then in this openness of this one point it includes, then you can be aware of maybe emotions that you don't bother with, like feeling lonely or sad, these kind of things. Or this kind of subtleties of, you know, resentment or disappointment or, you know, the extreme ones are quite easy, you know, easy because they kind of force themselves to attention. But as you open, then you can be aware of just the subtlety of emotions. And not judging, it's just embracing it so that it's not making a problem about the way it is. It's just knowing the way it is. It's like this, at this moment. The feeling, the sanya, waiting the sanya sankhara is like this. Bodies like this, rupa like this. So notice if you open to like emotional feeling, the mood, without judging it, don't make any problem, whatever, you know, its quality is, just any kind of feeling, whether it's emotional or physical, I need to embrace it, to sustain your attention, like holding it without trying to get rid of it or change it or think about it, but just totally accepting the mood you're in, the emotional or the physical sensations, if they're like pain or itching or whatever, tensions, in this sense of well-being, of embracing. Now when I do this, I notice that they all, you know, you're aware of their changingness. Like you're willing to let something be what it is. And it changes. And then you begin to recognize or realize non-attachment. It's like, even though we say embracing, in this way, Satisampajanya isn't attaching to them. It's not like, not upadana. It's letting, you know, like embracing, there's this sense of wideness it includes. It's not picky, choosy. You know, it's not saying I'll embrace only the good things and bad ones I won't. Bad along with the good, you know, the whole thing. the worm and the apple and the snake and the god. And so then it's like this allowing things to be what they are. So it's not like approving, not saying that you have to love worms and want them in your apples and like them as well as you like apples. It's not being asking you to be silly or ridiculous or impossible, but it's encouraging you to allow things to exist, even the things you don't like, to exist. Because if they exist, that's what they do. They're existing. It's not up to me to say, I'm not God, you know, saying, you know, this part of life I don't want. So the whole thing, the good and the bad, belongs. So sati sampajanya is that, is our ability to realize that, to know that in a direct way. And then the processes take care of themselves. It's not like Ajahn Sumedho trying to, you know, get his act together, trying to cleanse his mind, free himself from defilement, deal with his immature emotions, straighten out his wrong views, his crooked views, and trying to, you know, make himself into a better monk and become enlightened in the future. That doesn't work, I guarantee it. I've tried it. Now from this perspective, then you can use upayas or skillful means, so that you know, it's not like this is all, you know, idea that you should only do it like this or whatever, but upayas means skillful means for particular things that come up, you know, the conditions or you can just be mindful of everything, and that's true, you know, that's not wrong. But if, you know, some things are quite obsessive or threatening to us, and so then we can develop skillful means with that. And that, like Lumpa Cha encouraged me, I got a lot of encouragement from him to develop skillful means, because that takes panya, isn't it? You're using panya to just see how I would deal with things that, you know, I could. Found the emotional state, especially the difficult emotional habits. So it's like you can experiment. You know, don't be afraid to experiment and kind of see what kind of. You know, using catharsis or different, or just talking it out with somebody who listened to you, or thinking it out deliberately, or listening. One of mine was listening to my thoughts, like listening to somebody, the neighbors talking on the other side of the fence. And I'm just an innocent bystander listening, and they're carrying on these conversations, you know, about all the gossip and opinions, views, and that you know, I'm actually producing in my own mind, but I'm listening to it, like not involved, not getting interested in the subject matter, but just listening as it goes on and on about what it likes and doesn't like, and what's wrong with this person, and what's wrong with that person, and why I like this better than that, and if you want my opinion about this. And I just kept listening to these kind of inner voices, opinionated, arrogant, conceited, foolish voices that go on. Then I'd be aware that which is aware. And then notice, I did not make a note that which is aware. The awareness is my refuge, not in these gossips or these arrogant voices or opinions and views. That's a skillful means I found, but like the learning to help each other in the Sangha is listening, learning to listen to somebody, the developing relationship rather of preaching and you know, trying to tell somebody how to practice and what to do. Sometimes all we need to be doing is just learn how to listen and with our own sati sampajanya, just somebody else, they have an opportunity to verbalize their own fears or desires without being condemned or given all kinds of advice about it. These are going to be considered skillful means. There's some kinds of therapy can be considered skillful means. Like the Karuna Institute, there's a lot of monks interested in that, because that can be seen as skillful means. Or upayas that help us to deal with that's where we tend to be most blind and most undeveloped is in the emotional realm. So it's upayas is like, it's, you know, it is, it's learning to, you know, you do have the wisdom to do it. You know, don't consider yourself just, you know, if you consider yourself, oh, I'm not wise enough to do that, then don't even believe that. But also don't be afraid to ask for help and things like this. I mean, it's not a matter of one is better than the other, but just, you know, trust in by your own experience of suffering. You know, if you find you're obsessed, suddenly like things will obsess your consciousness, or memories will come up, or certain emotions, or very kind of silly things can just pursue you. foolish thoughts or whatever. And we say, I don't want to be bothered with that stupidity, and trying to get our samadhi and be filled with loving kindness and do all the right things and not see what we're doing. We're trying to become, we're trying to make ourselves fit into an image that is not unreal, you know, is imagined, it's an idealized image. The Buddha certainly didn't expect that. So this is in trusting yourself too. You know, whatever way it is for you, that's the way it is. And that's what you learn. That's where enlightenment is, right there. When you're an emotional wreck.